Welcome, everybody. This is the kernel questioning. Here are a few famous and even more famous kernel developers on the stage. And this is your chance to ask them questions, whatever you like. So think about some good questions. For the start, maybe everybody can introduce yourself quickly and tell us what you're famous for in the kernel or what features we have to thank you for. Boris?
My name is Boris Petkov, and I do RAS, like a little bit. And I work for AMD, and I also do AMD stuff like when it needs to be done.
I'm Lukas Stach. I'm doing stuff at the Nuvo driver, graphics driver stuff, and yeah, just in my free time. So I'm just a backup for when there are any graphics driver questions.
My name is Jan Kiska. I'm working for Siemens, and these days mostly working on KVM virtualization topics.
My name is Jörg Grödel. I take care of IOMMU drivers in the Linux kernel, and when I have time at the moment, I do also KVM stuff.
My name is Wolfram Sang. I'm one of the maintainers of the I2C subsystem, and I'm pretty much active in all subsystems which you need for embedded systems and ARM-related boards and stuff.
Hey, I'm Alexander Graf. I do KVM stuff, be the maintainer of PowerPC, KVM, and whenever I get around it, I fiddle around with different random architectures, mostly on KVM.
Hannes Reinecke, I'm doing all things storage, sadly, and working for SUSE, and not doing KVM.
I'm Steve Rosted. I work for Red Hat, and my biggest contribution to the Linux kernel is make local mod config.
My name is Frederick Weisbecker. I work for Red Hat, and I have been working on many areas like tracing, C groups, and RiserFS, trying to get out the bitkernel lock and trying to remove the timer tick and things like this.
Yeah, that's actually something I prepared a second question already. Can you describe a bit what you've done in the past few months, what you're working on right now, and what you're planning to work on for the next few months? Just some of it. You don't have to do all of it.
Okay, so in the last few months, I have worked on C groups, trying to remove some nasty, useless locking on the fork path. Trying to sanitize various things. I have also tried to upstream a subsystem feature to secure LXC containers against fork bombs. And I have also worked a lot on trying to remove this timer interrupt thing.
I'm working on basically, I found a bug in make local mod config that it basically will keep things that select things on. I need to, so you can remove more modules. But besides that being my top priority right now, there's a few other things I'm working on. One of them is I'll be taking over the 3.2 RT kernel as a stable release soon. I'm also going to probably, as promised in one of the other talks, that I'm going to break out the threaded soft IRQ daemon, so it has a timer soft IRQ daemon, and look at maybe even networking and stuff like that. That's for the RT side. On tracing side, I'm actually going to be rewriting a lot of the kernel shark tool, because I'm going to make it so it's pluginable, a lot more modules, so people could actually write plugins for the kernel shark to make it do things that it wants it to do. So you'll see a rewrite of kernel shark coming up within the year.
Is that threaded IRQ thing available for non-RT kernels or just for RT?
Oh, yeah. Oh, if you're interested, actually, I think in the 3.3 or 3.2 kernel, in 3.0, was it the original one? I can't remember which version's which, but Thomas Gleichner did get in threaded interrupts per driver. So if a driver decides not to use an interrupt and said, I'm going to use a thread for my interrupt, it could do that. That's been for the last few releases. Either, I think it was 3.2 that you could actually flip a switch in the 3.2 mainline kernel that says, I want all my interrupts to be threaded. And you could do that in today's kernel. So.
I have to forgive myself, poor enterprise bloke. I'm stuck with 3.0 kernel. So, I'm doing mainly enterprise work for SLES, and recently, last year's, I tried to work on more fancy array integration. So basically, offload a copy offloading, for example, and also better error handling, and doing a KVM driver for. So I do KVM after all, Megasas emulation I did, and next year's I will be do just, other things.
You also did the deduplication, the caching.
Thing. Ah, yeah, indeed, yeah, and I wrote an SSD cache module, indeed, the fourth implementation.
So the last column one, I usually hop around on different topics while being in the kernel and for KVM. I also jump around on other stuff that kind of comes into fun. And in the kernel land, we got support for Power7 machines in PowerPC KVM now. We have support for hypervisor-enabled embedded PowerPC machines, which probably none of you have ever seen, but they are used in routers and network infrastructure a lot. In that land, I also am planning to re-implement the instruction emulation code because that's currently three big switch statements which call each other, going through, you know, like 500 different cases each. Not quite, but that's gonna take that really takes a long time, and that's the hot pass, so we need to accelerate that. On the other side, last month we were working on getting OpenSUSE on ARM, which is in a like alpha phase right now, so it actually works. Now the beta is when we actually want people to use it that don't want to develop on it. So we did that, and in QEMU land, the normal obvious maintenance work of keeping PowerPC alive.
The last month I've been busy with bringing boards up and running, and those boards have been using mainly one system on chip, which is called the MX28. So I've been working on the infrastructure needed for that system on chip. I've been working on subsystems like I2C, SPI, audio subsystem, NAND, which was a very horrible topic for that. And while working a lot in the driver section of Linux, I am pretty aware of some, well, inconsistencies and some goofy bits. And in the next month, I would really like to clean that up and to make the average driver, well, easier to write, less error prone. And there have been ideas around for that for a few months. And nobody has time to implement the core work. Everyone is just doing drivers, but not the cores. And so I hope I will have time for that in the next month. So that will writing drivers will be a bit more convenient.
Over the last month, I was busy with upstream maintaining IOMMU drivers mostly. There were a lot of IOMMU drivers upcoming from the ARM side. So new ARM platforms all feature in IOMMU, and the drivers wanted to be reviewed and to work with the developers to get the drivers upstream. And besides that, I also did coding in the AMD IOMMU area, where I implemented support for the version 2 of the AMD IOMMU. And in the next time, yeah, upstream maintenance is ongoing. There are still new drivers popping up from the ARM side and probably also the PowerPC side. And yes, one of the next big projects is to bring up interrupt remapping for the AMD IOMMU, so that interrupts will actually be secure and the device can't issue arbitrary interrupts to the host. So it's basically a security feature.
Yeah, basically I worked last month in the kernel context on making device assignment, or making interrupt sharing for KVM device assignment working now. I think this is almost finished. At least I received some report, it's working now. And otherwise, in the kernel context, I'm not that busy right now. I'm more working on the QEMU side, so spend a lot of time on merging QEMU KVM, this fork of QEMU, into the mainline. And this will probably also keep me busy for the next month, I guess.
Yeah, most of my work was in the user space also. We've done a new driver for some ancient card, like the GeForce 5 and 6, that NVIDIA recently dropped from their drivers. Yeah, in the kernel, I've implemented precise replaying timestamping, so you have really precise timestamps for things like medical imaging and such on the full range of NVIDIA graphics cards. Yeah. I decline to talk about anything I will do in the future, so you can't name me to it.
I was supposed to do a lot of RAS work, all the machine checks and decoding and stuff, but internal work got first, which turned into this level one instruction cache bulldozer patch for Linux that took a long time. And hopefully now I'm going to have more time to do the RAS to-do list.
So, any questions?
Yep. Yeah, I got a question to all of you, and this is, what laptop do you use? And
my laptop died.
Actually, I did buy a laptop before. It was actually an Asus laptop. But what laptop? I in the U.S. we have something called Black Friday. So, and once a year, I actually, my wife lets me buy things, and I bought 4 laptops. And I've spent under $1,000. Well, actually, probably a little over $1,000 for 4 laptops.
Did they just work fine, or had you do some modifications and tricks to get them running perfectly?
Yes. No, I actually installed Debian Stable on all of them. And the reason why I'm on Debian Stable is because, okay, I'll admit it, I hate GNOME 3 and Systemd. And I figured Debian Stable will be the longest one, the last one to have it.
So any more experiences with buying laptops and... Come on, you have all.
I can out myself here. Actually one of the few people probably in this crowd who believe that the Linux desktop is dead and useless, so I actually use a Mac for my desktop. Because in servers and embedded it's awesome, it's really useful, but all the actual applications on top don't work in an open source way. But so it just doesn't work out for me, since designers don't like to hack code. So every time you use an application, that like a desktop application on Linux, it ends up being awkward and not well thought through. So and they keep changing their interfaces too, which is even more annoying. So I kind of stopped using them whenever I can. Otherwise, on at work, I actually use, obviously because I work for SUSE, so I use SUSE there on a normal AMD workstation.
Go up on what he just said. Actually, believe it or not, you're not the only. There's actually been a lot of kernel developers that are getting very upset at what's going on in user space. And you're not the first person I've seen actually in a kernel developer be using Macintosh. I mean, that's actually kind of sad, but it says something.
Yeah, but it's true, because I'm also recently had the misfortune of installing the latest and greatest OpenSUSE thing, which made me switch back to XFCE, and yeah, exactly. So because what I need is more a usable editor and sort the rest basically. One of the reasons why I'm not having a pad, because typing in text in there is horrible.
Yeah, my answer is going to the same direction. I mean, I need a lot of shells and maybe a browser, so I can take pretty much any laptop. I'm not dependent on any graphics, whatever. So what laptop do I use? The one which is nearest to me when I have a problem I want to fix. So it doesn't really matter.
There's actually one requirement. It should go to sleep first if I clap down the lid. But that's about it.
Just another thing is, I'm actually more interested in desktops because, as me, I have four machines that I kick off in a disk CC. Are you familiar with what disk CC is? It's a distributed compile environment. Because to me, the most important thing is how quick can I build a kernel. The more I wait for the compile to happen, the less productive I am. So I really try. I'm more worried. To me, a laptop is just a terminal to get to my test suite.
Okay. Any more questions? Raise your hand. And if you, I can translate if I have to, as long as it's not a 2-minute question.
I think this has been asked before for kernel questioning, but it always interests me because I have a hard time with it. How do you deal with the volume of mails on LKML?
I can answer that one really easily. I completely ditched LKML. It's useless to me. I work in KVM land. We have our own mailing list there. The whole generic LKML stuff just is of no interest.
Says someone where the traffic of a QEMU list is even higher than LKML. So not much difference there. No, but yeah, basically ignoring. I'm surprised that there was something useful on LKML.
I have to admit my compiling machine is not as fast as Steven, so I have a few minutes once in a while and I just freeze the subject and throw them away. Although I have to admit there are useful threads once in a while.
Just real quick, I do actually like to scan LKML. One thing is, actually, my little Freudian slip right there was actually perfect. One way I read LKML is LWN. If you don't know what LWN, Linux Weekly News, Jonathan Corbett writes some really great articles about what's going on in LKML. When I see something there, then I actually go back to read the threads. So what John talks about, I go back and read what was going on. A lot of times I'm actually involved in the conversation in the first place, but it's good to reread what someone else said to me. But also filter. I actually have things like trace, real-time stuff being filtered into stuff from the LKML into folders. So I ignore things that, anything that says staging, I ignore, and et cetera.
I also belong to the group of persons who usually ignore LKML. If something interesting for me happens, it's usually CC to other lower traffic mailing lists, which I also read and scan more regularly, and that's basically sufficient for me.
Yeah, what's very useful for me in my workflow is actually reading all the mailing lists on LKML via gmain.org, the news interface. So you can easily pick up the threads and reply to them without breaking history. And this is quite useful, I think, because I'm not subscribed to any mailing list, just following this basically this way.
I'm not on the Linux curling mailing list at all. I have some special mailing lists where I'm on DRI devil and Nuvo devil, so that's not so high volume list, so you can easily pick out the topics you are actually interested in. Yeah.
All right, so most of the people CC you on stuff, and there's this get maintainer script, which is actually pretty cool. And if you don't get CC'd, you just browse through the mails and choose the ones you want, but you can never read everything. It's just too much.
That's John Corbett's job.
Yeah, right.
Of course it is.
No, I don't read anything.
So any other question? There must be something you wanted to ask kernel developers. What desktop environment they prefer? What editor? Is that true?
Actually, I developed in Emacs and I use them to
for the editor thing, I have to live in Emacs for development. I can't code in Vim, but I can't use Emacs to edit any config file. I have to use Vim.
Well, that's true. Don't laugh about him. It's the same with me. So, yeah, that's true. You can't edit config files in Emacs now. It doesn't work. You have to. Or SED.
I don't think editor frameworks actually help you, but I'm all Vim. It's just easy. It took me like 10 minutes to get out of Emacs the first time I started it.
Yeah, it's Vim here as well. I don't know how. Actually, I can't recall why I chose it, but I'm there and I'm happy, so Vim.
I'm also a Vim guy. I actually recently started Emacs again, but this was for setting up a Steam's laptop, so this is my excuse. I'm using Vim all the time, basically.
Well, I'm writing so few code that I'm only using Kwrite.
Oh God, so I have to admit it. I'm a kid of the 90s, so I'm really used to use a mouse. And yeah, I'm running GNOME 3 since it landed in Fedora release. And yes, on top of that, for coding, mostly Eclipse. So pretty heavy white.
I also use Vim and also Cisco because you can browse to the source code of the kernel very fast. No. Cisco, sorry.
How do you guys keep track of your kernel config when there are some interesting features? How do you keep track of this? Yeah. Do you the default config, or do you guys always create a new one for each kernel?
Well, in my case, I build almost every RC, so I just go and say make alt config, and I just reply to the new questions.
Running mostly the new Git tree kernels, and I'm starting with some config from Fedora and just picking what's new and exciting, and yeah, build my config from there.
Yeah, for me it really depends on the task. If I'm working for normal server scenario, then I'm picking up my distributions configuration and maybe adjusting it a bit. If I'm going for embedded scenarios, I basically use the config we have for the target and then, of course, work from this on.
I'm a big user of local mode config, actually. So I have a config for every machine, and only when I get known to a new feature I want to enable, then I enable it manually in the config.
Well, commercially, we of course have special configs for the customers, which are stored separately. But if I just want to test something, then I pretty much rely on the dev configs in the kernel. And if they're not appropriate for what I want to do, I'll send a patch and update them.
Yeah, for like, usually I have a really limited set of machines, like one box to test E500 V2, one box to test E500 MC, one box to test G5s, for my iBook, for whatever, like all the different CPU models. And once they set up, I just do make alt config. I even have like this thing where I just do yes, like empty string pipe, make alt config, so I don't care about new options. They should just default to whatever they default to, because the machine does work right now, so why bother? And then just update it to whatever is the latest and do my automatic testing on them. For new machines, I do dev config, like make dev config and then take it from there and actually enable KVM and everything I need.
For me, it's actually a very good question, because I take configs seriously, and because since I sort of maintain this tool called ftrace, it's very intrusive. And one of the things about tracing is it should not be seen.
It's kind of like the old child thing, you know, should be seen and not heard. Tracing should be not even seen and don't crash your machine. So the fact, one thing that we always say, don't crash Linus's machine, because that really pisses him off. And so what I do is with the config options, I do the local mod config to take the default distribution. I try to use a distribution or a config from Debian and a config from Fedora and build that and test both. But I also wrote this tool called K-Test, which is in the kernel today. It's under tools testing K-Test. And I run, I have a config, config that does an all yes config, all no config, various preemptions. It does it with tracing enabled, tracing disabled, no preempt, preempt desktop, all the different preemptions. And then I also, then it kicks off rand config and just builds and boots rand configs over and over again. So actually every so often when I do this, you'll see probably like 10 patches from me from random places in the kernel that broke, that just said, you know, random config found this bug here. Here's a patch. You know, it fixes it. So from my point of view, no config is specific for me. All configs are.
And also, one of the most important...
You skipped Hannes.
What?
That's okay.
Oh, sorry. So one of the most important things when you do kernel development is you have a lot of very interesting things in the debug section to ensure you have... correct log validation, tons of debugging stuff to ensure you're not scheduling while being in an atomic section and things like this. So,
I have a question to you guys. How many of you, I already think I know you, enabled lockdep during your development? Raise your hand. Okay. What? Yeah, okay, that's good. If you said no, I would go there and slap you.
And I'm the odd man out. I'm using 3.0. My area tends to be a bit long-lived. All bugs I find there are present in mainline too.
There was some talk during the kernel summit, as far as I know, that the kernel is getting too complex, or some people think it's getting too complex. Is it like that for you?
Yes.
Yes? Why?
Is something that should be done?
Well, the scheduler is kind of complex, and especially since I'm kind of maintaining the real-time part of it, I'm trying to make it more simpler. Yes, it should be. Probably simplified and actually relooked. And sometimes I wonder if it should be. Sometimes scheduling is one of those things that, you know, you try to handle all cases. And I will admit, honestly, I'm not really for the one schedule for everything. I almost do kind of want a plug-in scheduler, but the scheduling maintainers are very against that. But
I think the generic part of the scheduler stays almost simple, but the part that implements the fair scheduling, so this is the default policy, it's impossible to understand if you haven't worked on it for 2 years. It's horrible.
Just want to say, like I said about the simplicity, I think the reason why the scheduler is very complex is because it's not a plug-in scheduler. You can't kind of modify it for your... You can't have multiple different schedules. It's got to be one scheduler that does everything, which that... definition alone is going to make it complex.
We just had the example recently on our mailing list where one of our most ancient colleagues complained that the kernel is becoming more and more slowly when doing I/O, which was Webmantel. So just because the scheduling got more and more complex, and what with us being made primarily a server company, obviously the I/O run smoothly, but the desktop suffered. Tough shit.
Well, now the kernel is so huge, that doesn't apply for the whole kernel, I think. I mean, the scheduler part is surely pretty complex, but that shouldn't frustrate people who are interested in kernel development. There are good starting points, there are subsystems where you can catch up pretty easily and start contributing patches and whatever. So. And there's still lots to be done in the kernel, so all this talk, it's too complex, might be valid for certain parts of the kernel, but definitely not for all of them.
I actually completely agree with that. If you have, usually in the kernel, you end up having subsystems and sometimes even subsystems and subsystem. So within those, things actually become self-contained, easy to, you know, work with. You don't really use generic infrastructure that much. It's like basically comparing, if you write a user space program, you're not going to patch glibc all the time. You're not looking at what exactly this function call is like in glibc is doing. You don't care because you just call it and it works. Same goes for the kernel. If the infrastructure is there, it works. In a new subsystem, you have your own infrastructure that then again is in most cases actually pretty well designed.
That is because you can't patch glibc. I had a crash once on fork. Not much you can do wrong with fork. Doesn't even have arguments, but it crashed. But this was by design.
I think for an operating system kernel that has more than 10 million lines of codes, it's surprisingly uncomplex. Certainly there are a few areas which are really complex, like memory management and scheduler too. But yeah, I find it quite manageable. If it does not come to things like handling parallelism, but that's more a problem of parallelism than of the Linux kernel.
For a hobbyist, it's really terrifying. We recently had some performance problems. It took me about 20 minutes to track it down, thanks to OProfile and friends. It took me about 2 hours to read the code and see what's going wrong, and it took me more than 2 months to come up with something remotely working. So, yeah, not upstream quality. So, yeah, so it was a problem in the virtual memory subsystem, and it's really not nice to look at. So, yes, it's too complex.
2 points I have. First, the fact that we have the bisection search means that this is just too many patches we have there, and nobody can even know what everything does. So just going blindly and bisecting stuff is already one way to show that the kernel is too big. And also, we definitely could use some simplification in some subsystems. So.
So if, there's a question.
Just a little question is, nowadays there are other concurrent operating systems, sorry to mention them, that are able to, for example, restart the graphics driver if it crashes, and some other nice things. And now in the Linux kernel, if some driver makes some, say, a zero-pointer dereferentiation or something like this, the whole kernel crashes, and yeah, nice blinking LEDs, and that's it. Are there plans or tendencies to do something like layering of the different kernel parts, like graphic driver is something that can crash, and the inner kernel just restart and so on? Maybe. I do not want to say this evil word.
Yeah, so, actually, to me, I think the kexec kdump to find out what bug. It shouldn't crash. But yeah, if you want like your drivers to be able to crash, you only could write a user space driver. That would work. But no, macro kernel, that's out of it's. And what you're describing is that. And that's just not going to happen. Although, if it's a user-based process or threat, if it crashes on the kernel, there's a lot of times I've had kernel crashes that didn't take down the machine. It would actually just kill the thread. Usually, if it's a system thread, sometimes, yeah, that will take down the machine. But if it's a user process that's actually within the kernel and it's accessing a driver and it crashes, that goes fine. In fact, actually, interrupt threads can crash and not always kill the machine.
Actually, I have to second this. I've got several crashes where the machine just sent me a nice OOS but continued to work in a fashion. Obviously, the process got stuck and nothing happened anymore, but the machine worked. So it's not particularly true there. But on the other side, if there was such an error, that is, by the very nature, unpredictable. You don't know what exactly happened. Otherwise, you would have handled it. But you haven't, hence you don't know. So you can't tell what went wrong. So if you continue from there, well, all bets are off. Everything can happen. So I still find it more reasonable to restart the whole machine, to basically get a dump so that you know what happened, and then restart from scratch, that you're not running into the same issue again.
Just to continue on what he just said, even in a macro kernel, if you, like you said, if the drivers, the graphics driver crashes, you just restart the graphics driver and then continue on. But you don't know what it was interacting with when it crashed. So even though you could restart it and say, hey, everything's okay, it might have caused something else to go into a bad state. So really, it is the best thing. Even when that happens in a macro kernel, you should shut down the machine and restart again in a fresh known state.
How many working microcontrollers are there? Zero?
Sorry. So, for the graphics case, it's actually been the case for, I don't know how many, like, decades now, but you can restart X, right? There's nothing preventing you. When your graphics driver, basically your graphics subsystem crashes, yeah, sure, just go on. Restart it. X can be restarted. If you, sometimes. If you do have like null pointer difference in the kernel, it still works on. I've had that so many times in mostly my own code, and unless I did it in really critical paths where I was doing a world switch between a virtual machine memory context and my host kernel memory context, where doing bad things is definitely not a good idea. Apart from that, even like only 50 instructions into the recovery code of the host, it was all fine. I always managed to get back traces and actually debug all the stuff on the live system. You can't RM mod the module anymore. Yeah, sure. I mean, deadlock, reboot. And if you really need to contain something, if you really want to have it completely isolated, there's this really cool thing coming up called VFIO, which is basically UIO on steroids. So just use that, write your drivers in user space, and you get a Mac kernel.
Not even just the other processes could be in a bad state, the hardware could be in a bad state. So really, you want to shut down and restart.
If you can reset it and the hardware wasn't initialized by BIOS when you're stuck, CF graphics, sure, your graphic might crash and the system might continue, but you won't be able to see a bloody thing on your screen. What does it help you?
That's true. I need it.
Any other question? Okay. Now I need to walk finally.
What's your opinion on C++ in kernel space? I mean, it's pretty unlikely that it will happen in Linux, but in general, there are some kernels which do that, and I mean, it's obvious that you can't use everything, but just in general, what do you think? Would it be a good idea for a new kernel now?
There used to be kernels in Pascal, right? Who happened to be rewritten in C.
You said in C++?
Yeah.
No, actually, my goal, and I've been trying, I haven't quite figured it out, but slowly doing it, is to make the kernel written in Perl. But no, seriously though, about C++, one thing is, like you mentioned it, you have to limit it, C++, because C++ is just one of those things that back a long time ago in college or whatever, actually going for my master's, my professor said, in the programming languages, said, I challenge anyone here that thinks they know C++, and I will show you something that you didn't know about it. And he said, and I know a lot about it, and I still don't know, I still learn every day. C++ is one of those monsters that just doesn't work. And also, one thing about, and coming from the real-time side, C++ is also quite unpredictable after the way it does things is more in an unpredictable fashion, where C is straightforward and very predictable.
Yeah, and C++ is much harder to debug because, I mean, the C converted in assembly is actually pretty easy to, well, sort of easy to debug. And we do that all the time. So if we had to debug assembly convert C++ converted in assembly, this is much harder to.
Just real quick before I get to you. Also, there's been several times where the bug that we found was in GCC. Now, can you imagine C++ with that bug?
That's actually the most valid point here, Frederick just said. There's a pretty good bijection between C code and assembly. So, actually any assembly. So you can, by looking at the assembly, guess what the C code might look like and where you're roughly at. With C++, this simply isn't valid anymore. Plus, overloading is impossible to debug. You have to be exactly knowing what state the C++ internal machine currently is at this state before you can even begin to debug. Not a good idea.
We actually just recently had that discussion in QMU, which, given its scope, is actually similar bees. It also got like this core thing and like lots of subsystems, and nobody actually knows the whole picture anymore because it's just got grown so big. And we had the same issue there where slowly we realized we actually need objects because like your PCI card is an object, your CPU is an object, you actually want to plug them somewhere. We do need something to handle objects, but doing C++ would be completely overkill. And after like the several iterations, we kind of realized, well, we can do everything we need in C. All we need to do is we need to have some clever macros and some good infrastructure below it, and then we have a full object model in C without any C++ on top. And that just works. It's a lot easier to debug, it's a lot easier to read, and ends up being cleaner.
My opinion is that it is much harder to write good maintainable code in C++ than it is to write it in C, because in C you can actually look at the code and you see what's going on. That's not the case in C++. When you have objects which have destructors and constructors, and they are called implicitly on when you pass it as an argument or when you leave the function or at ordinary places. So it's much harder to write maintainable code in C++. And that's another reason.
And the last reason is not going to fit in the 80 column limit.
Some more questions?
Okay.
Hey guys, since you brought that up before, could you imagine any drivers or driver subsystems that could or should move to user space for whatever reason?
Okay. I got a good person there. One subsystem I would actually really like to see outside, but I'm not sure if it's possible, it might be with a lot of trickery and real-time patches involved, is the graphic stuff. I don't think it belongs in kernel space, but I guess lots of other people have different opinions on that one. So it's the problem there.
And it's always the other subsystem which has to be moved in user space.
Honestly, I'm the type of person that I'd rather see more user space stuff in the kernel. Perl.
And this is actually a very valid reason. Because the thing is, everything in user space can be killed in user space. And we have several instances where you have to have a daemon running for even having access to your root file system, which makes things really tricky. If you do a shutdown and the shutdown says, all right, killing all daemons, thank you very much. So there are actually some, and especially if you want, then try to do a swap over on your system, which is happened to be managed by a user space daemon. So if you need more memory, you have to swap in the daemon, which happens to be reside on the same file system it serves. So it has to swap itself in using the. Doesn't really work.
Yeah.
I'm also with Stephen here. I might not be valid for every driver in the world because floating point might be one reason, or very, very complex state machines for some industrial protocols. But in general, I would like to see drivers in the kernel. So one reason might be that they have undergone a proper review, which I'm not too familiar with, if it would get that in the user space. And it will for sure be publicly available in user space. All kinds of binary blob drivers thingies can happen.
How do you see the development of virtualization support in the Linux kernel, specifically regarding Xen and KVM? How do you see the development of... Okay, sorry. So, how do you see the development of the virtualization support in the Linux kernel, specifically Xen versus KVM?
It's my chance. No, actually, I was always completely against Xen. Except for the very beginning phase, where it was like really cool, because it was the only open source way of doing it. That's actually changed in the last 2 or 3 years. The Citrix guys, basically everybody who was in Citrix before and did Xen and did all the crap they did with not being upstream friendly, being completely just morons about the whole thing, they replaced all of them. There's none of them around anymore. There's a completely different group in there. That is really, really upstream friendly. They engage with all the communities. They actually are helping out. They do common code contributions. They try to think about what they do. It's actually become really, really good. And they try to find a niche now where they can actually survive, which I hope they find, because they're actually cool guys. I guess that explains my view on that one too, right?
Is there a niche? I mean, the technical model, how Xen and KVM work, is quite different. So is Xen maybe too complicated to survive in the long run?
That's not the point. We need more micros here. No, I'm first. Yes, legacy hardware. So if you have hardware which is not virtualization capable, you need Xen, basically. As soon as you have hardware which is virtualization capable, you can use Xen, but where's the point? You can as well use KVM.
All right, so there are some points. Performance, no. No. The better your hardware gets, the less the performance actually is of interest there.
We've seen significant differences in specifically disk IO performance between Xen and KVM, and any non-stupid benchmarks for KVM basically resulted in KVM sucking. We've seen silly benchmarks where KVM disk IO was faster than physical disk because people forgot to turn off the caching. And when the tests were done properly with proper sync IO, yeah, Xen was pretty much significantly faster.
It should be.
KVM.
So KVM
and it actually matters to us.
KVM basically, if you do like all your surroundings and benchmarks correctly, on the disk layer is giving you like 90 to 100% native performance. It's actually okay. There's really little room of improvement that needs to be improved there. So KVM is doing great on that one. We can definitely talk about your setup later on if you know maybe something's wrong there. I do know several benchmarks on really big machines where KVM just blew out the competition, including VMware. So on this guy, I don't think that's the real issue. There are other areas, for example, Xen PV mode, which is gonna die anyways. So even Xen is like, even Citrix is killing that one. Xen PV mode is really bad at anything that switches contexts. It's really bad at 64-bit mode because you can't do the two different ring trick there. You have to actually switch between full kernel and Xen and user space mode, always hopping between Xen. So it has penalties in that one. They do get some performance out of things because they can be dirtier than we allow. So for example, Xen block IO, partially, like, unless you use the, what's it called, block tap, unless you use that one, the driver, the backend, is actually in the host kernel. So in your DOM 0 kernel, which I don't really find a very intelligent design. Sure, it can be fast at times. Actually, that even Citrix measured that block tab was faster than the in-kernel thing most of the time. But that's a different part. The niche they're trying to find, at least the one I'm aware of, is isolation. For Xen, you can actually have multiple DOM zeros. They wouldn't call it multiple DOM zeros, but essentially that's the point. You can have multiple hosts accessing VMs that you can then use to completely partition your system. So you can have five VMs running, accessing only like this one disk controller that is only accessible to this one VM, and the other like hypervisor VM can then again run five different VMs that cannot interfere. So they can completely isolate all the devices. That's another idea they have. As I said, they're trying to find a niche, and the only one they can find is either where Citrix is pushing stuff or where they can think of a reason for a more complex architecture to survive. And that's kind of hard to find.
Just to add one thing regarding how this is maintainable long term, I think Xen has its limits regarding maintainability. Because if it wants to be as powerful as KVM, it has to become Linux. You have to support, and you don't think about just x86, you have to support in the embedded world out there every damn board where you have virtualization for and where you want to boot your hypervisor on. When you use KVM, and Linux is running usually on this board, then you have basically the bring up already done. Then you can start using virtualization. Xen has to do this on its own. You see it a bit in the x86 world, they have to support all these special features of x86 on their own. Power management, for example. So they have to re-implement what Linux is doing, or have to ask Linux to do this for them, because they don't want to do all this hypervisor. And this doesn't really scale, because then you end up really re-implementing Linux for all these parts. Specifically, look not only on x86, but on Power, on ARM, and other architectures. ARM is very interesting because it's becoming probably one server architecture in the future. So it will run the same issues we have on x86. Xen is pushing in this direction, but I also know quite a few people who are interested in doing this with KVM on the ARM V8 architecture for good reasons.
Some time ago, I read on LKML that Linus rejected a pull request from the ARM architecture. I think one or two of you mentioned he is or was working on ARM. And Linus thought that it was all crap because every vendor copied the whole tree and he wanted this to be unified. Do you know how far this has gone or if there's work on it?
Well, I think we reached 42 by now. You can't really tell how far. Things have developed. There's been lots of consolidation. Consolidation is a very, very hot word in the ARM world right now. Lots of things have been going on. I think the progress is quite good because Linux later wrote a mail that he's been satisfied what's going on there. But there's still plenty of stuff to do. The one major improvement is that this yelling made really people think about it, and especially the maintainers are a lot more looking if such code is already there or if it could be unified or whatever. But it still happens that you write or you want to write some code and find out that it's four times in the kernel under different names. Those spots get identified and well, we're not there yet, if we can ever be there, but lots of good things are happening. And I think most people are satisfied with what is happening.
Yeah, there's been a lot of, I mean, when Linus gave his little rant, that really shook things up. And I sat in on at the Linaro conference in Budapest last year, that was basically the topic was, let's fix this. And a lot of ideas came out. A lot of work has been done. It's still not quite there yet. But I know because I actually was working on some patches, and they said, don't even bother with these patches because this code has been completely rewritten.
So throw them out, come back later, because, and so the next, in 3.3 or 3.4 that comes out, you'll see a much more, it's, things are completely rewritten and being fixed up, so it's getting there.
If somebody wants to get a up-to-date status of that ARM stuff, there was a video from the ELC, I think, from Arndt Bergmann, where he explained all everything what happens in the past few months since Linus yelled. It's you can find it in one of the latest kernel logs, and if not, just drop me a mail. What? Yeah, I think it's on the Linux Foundation video site. Yeah.
And another, question that's maybe a bit related. Do you think Android will be merged into mainline in the next few years? I mean, there's the ongoing effort right now from
people. A person once told me, and I'll keep his name off because he kind of told me privately, and it would really probably get him in trouble if it got out who it was, but he said there's going to be a time where Linus will have to merge his fork into Android. No, actually, but seriously, on a serious point, Android is a beast of its own. And it's going to be, I'll just say it's going to be interesting to see how the future plays out. A lot of the problems is Android is a business model. And Linux is a community, and their point of views do not always match. And when things, sometimes I think they don't care. It's queer. The Android group in Google is a strange bunch. The rest of Google is extremely open source, community wise, friendly. But Android is almost a separate company within Google, and I don't really know how this is going to pan out.
Yeah. So the it's not the first time that this happened. Similar thing happened with I forgot the name. Oh, bummer. VMware, incidentally, who also ran or used to run a Linux kernel, but not telling anybody. And the Android folks learned the lesson. So always now and then throwing some goodies to the Linux fork. See, we are contributing. And then the Linux crowd is quiet, and then they can go on do its own thing, and I think that'll continue to happen.
Well, there is an effort. There is an Android stuff in the staging. There's an Android tree. So there is a lot of work. Greg Crowhartman's been really being pushing hard, going to Google, trying to talk with the Android folks, and we're trying to get stuff in. Unfortunately, what's happening is we're getting stuff in through the staging tree, and the maintainers at NACT, the first issue of it, came back and said, wait a minute, this hasn't been fixed yet. Why is it in staging? And you know, so staging's been trying to kind of a way to get around things. And actually, Linus Torvalds himself is more of like, if it's being used, let's use it. But there's major maintainers that don't like it. So even within the community, it's questionable.
I also think we still have to see how stable Android really is. I mean, It might happen that some Android code gets merged into the mainline, and two releases later, Google has rewritten that part completely. They can do. I've heard Google engineers saying, "Oh, no problem. I've written that time 5 times. I'll write it 6 or 7 times because their priorities shift." That might be also considered when talking about Android code.
It's getting late. I guess a few people want to go and find a beer. So one last final question. If you had time and would support from your employer and could do something in user space, improve there, something that really annoys you, what would you do? Fix that.
Yeah, but I need to think about it. So
one thing in user space that really annoys me. Oh, that's easy. Evolution. It always takes away features I use. Every time I'm afraid to upgrade because every time that's one thing I plan on actually. I've downloaded the source and it's actually bigger than Linux kernel. So I got to figure out how to fix some things in evolution, but that's one thing I would do.
Rewrite LVM. That's horrible. It has a modular architecture, but vertically. Not as classical so, but this way. So which means you have to always call through all modules and back again to do anything. Cool idea.
I'm actually working on user space just as well as on kernel space, so it will probably just be the same thing. And since I said before, I gave up on all the desktop stuff. There's only so much left that actually needs fixing. There are some like really big holes in QEMU land that need serious work. That some of that code, you would look at it and probably your eyes would fall out. So that would probably be the thing. But that's the same thing I'm doing today. So sounds like I got a cool job then.
Well, I'd been given time to do anything I want. I think I'd go back to my Commodore 64 and start hacking on that one again. Because that gives me thrills, yeah.
If I would have to do something useful in user space, I would probably write more tools to ease kernel development.
Well, I probably have been unlucky so far, but I'm looking for an open source, working out of the box video conferencing system. It's just not working, whatever I tried before, so it's always fun to see it's crashing in various ways because some versions do not match or whatever is going on, I don't know, but it's just fun. But these days, even Google is crashing, so the Google Talk is also crashing, so it's probably just fair. It's a problem that's not easily solvable, but I would work on this.
Get rid of this big, clunky X server. But there's serious work underway from other people, so I think I don't have to do this. through it, maybe some years out. But yeah, X is obsolete by now. We built around the core, and then remove the core, and build around another layer, and remove other things, and it's not X anymore, so we have to come up with something new, what's maintainable, at least.
I'll probably do something with compilers, if there's no kernel. I want more games.
Okay, so thank you. Any closing words? Does anyone want to say something? It can be games. Thanks for answering the questions. Thanks for the questions. Have a nice evening. Grab some beer. Enjoy the rest of the Chemnitzer Linux Tage.